So sometimes kids are diagnosed because right at birth, a doctor, a midwife, parents look at the genitals of a child and they say, boom, it's a boy, or boom, it's a girl. But sometimes, due to a genetic factor, a kiddo is born with genitals that do not confirm them easily as male or female. You know, the biggest thing about our work is that what happens to these kids that are born where their genitals do not immediately confirm them is that there's a great deal of fear and prejudice and shame that the way it has been traditionally dealt with is that a pediatric urologist is called in and a scalpel is raised, and we wind up having a situation where these kids have their genitals, quote-unquote, normalized. And that's always to the female because you can't do it the other direction. But these surgeries, when you put a scalpel into perfectly healthy flesh, and by and large, there's no medical emergency here. It's a social emergency. When these kids have these surgeries, you put a scalpel into healthy flesh, you create scar tissue. And that scar tissue winds up lacking in sensation, sometimes resulting in pain.
Which can be lifelong.
Absolutely. And really, I think that the most important thing is that the minute you raise a scalpel to a kid and you say, hey, the way you were born is not good enough, or it's not going to cut it, or we're afraid of this. Because very scared parents think, who's going to change the diaper? What are we going to do? How are we going to explain this? We need to do something ostensibly to protect the child from fear and prejudice and shame. It really winds up only doing that very thing. It instills shame. It instills greater fear and prejudice. And that's why people have not heard about intersex conditions.
And Jim, often this is done to children who have no say in this. No matter what their age, the surgery is done because the parents want it done.
The stretches to get parents to conceive of their children as future sexual beings, as future autonomous adults. And in my experience with friends who have had kids, with my own parents, that's the last thing that parents want to think about on the day their kid is born.
Let's talk about your experience, Jim. You were born with this intersex trait.
Yeah, I was born with XY chromosomes and undescended testes and a phallus that was puzzling to my caregivers, my parents, my doctors. They didn't know if it was a very large clitoris or a very small penis. What happened to me was that they took out my reproductive organs. They cut off my internal testes, undescended testes, and they removed my penis, which is what it was then, what it would be now. And they raised me as a girl.
But you're now living as a man.
Right.
Eden, you also had this trait, but in a different situation. Was it chromosomal?
Jim and I share the same syndrome, but there is a complete form, quote-unquote, and a partial form. And so in my situation, I was born looking, and the word is phenotypically, totally female. And it was not discovered until I was not going through, you know, a typical puberty stage. I didn't start menstruating. All my other little girlfriends had. I was very concerned and confused. But my intersex story doesn't start until I'm 14 and living in Butte, Montana, and begging my mother to take me to the gynecologist or the pediatrician, where I understood that you could get, there was a miracle shot that would make you start your period. I mean, basically a powerful dose of estrogen. And we did that, and nothing happened. And that's when the conversations, I had blood tests done, and then I was no longer included in the conversations that took place between my mother and my doctor. I was in the waiting room, not knowing what was going on, and then watching my mother come out, red-eyed, not able to look at me. And I don't think she was not able to look at me because she was ashamed of me necessarily. I think she was just terrified and didn't know what to do. So her thinking was, well, I'm going to take her to the very best place I can think of. So we got on a plane and went to the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. And at the Mayo Clinic, this storied institution of medicine, I met with endocrinologists and had more blood drawn, and it was very quickly decided that I was going to have a surgery. And the surgery, I was told, was to take out my cancerous twisted ovaries, and that's all the information I ever got.
It wasn't true.
It was not true. It was not true. What was true, and what I learned in stages after that, was that I had XY, or typically male chromosomes. I had undescended testes that were pumping out large amounts of testosterone, and some of that naturally converts to estrogen through the aromatization process. So I had a little bit of secondary sex characteristic. I had a little breast development, but I was also very tall. And so this surgery happened, and they sent me home, and I got put on the Premarin regimen as well. Again, if you take out your hormone-producing organs, your reproductive organs, you have to replace that or you don't get the bone protection. And so osteoporosis is a very real consideration. What wound up coming to light for me is that while I looked entirely female, I had undescended testes. I had XY chromosomes. I would never have children biologically, and I was told that. But the idea that a little girl could have testes in place of ovaries was untenable. That was not okay. They inflate the medical profession, inflated at that time a cancer risk of having testes remain a child abdominally. Turns out that risk is actually very, very low. There was the understanding that she doesn't need to know. The doctors at the Mayo Clinic told my mother, we're not going to tell her. She doesn't need to know. We're only going to tell her cancerous twisted ovaries and you'll never have kids and you have to take these pills.
We should make the point that the physicians and the parents in this case are trying to do what they think is best for the child. It's just that, in your opinion, misguided approach, because really honesty would take away the shame.
Absolutely. I mean, the moment you decide to lie to a kid, it constitutes a real attachment disruption between parents and the child. There's a secret that the parents are now tasked with keeping. A secret is by definition a shameful state. So whether I knew that or not, I certainly felt that there was something incredibly shameful.
Jim, the Interface Project, what you and Eden hope it does is, first of all, remove the shame and also give people information so that they can make decisions that are best for them.
Our intention also is to reach out to caregivers, doctors, and families. I mean, intersex individuals will find some narratives on our website that will resonate with them and that will give them encouragement and make them feel supported.
The motto of our project is no body is shameful. And the Interface Project is modeled somewhat after Dan Savage's It Gets Better campaign, which is gay and lesbian celebrities speaking to youth saying, hey, coming out is difficult. Maybe you don't have a lot of support. Maybe being outside of the typical mainstream world is hard. But it does get better because you're able to find support and community, and we will effect some social change over time. I think that the one thing we don't advocate for third space gender or fourth or fifth or sixth. We say to parents, choose a gender, choose a name, and and go forth and know, but know this, don't ring a bell that cannot be unrung with a scalpel. Let your child tell you who they are because they know. They will know.
I've been speaking with Eden Atwood and Jim Ambrose, and they're co-founders of the Interface Project, bringing to light the trait of intersex. Wish you the best of luck with the project.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much
for being with us.
Thank you
so much.